Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action. Hi, friends, it's Diane, and I have a great guest for you today. This is an interview that I promise you will go places not even we will understand. With me today, I have a great gentleman. His name is Paul Zelizer, and you might have heard of him, and you might not have, but by the end of this episode, you're going to want to know more about him, I'm certain. I listen to Paul's podcast, Awarepreneurs, all the time. In fact, every Saturday, I binge listen to it, some of the episodes twice. He's got an amazing voice and an amazing mission and has great guests. So I wanted to know more about him, and we have a mutual friend who hooked us up so he could be on the show today with me, and I'm so delighted because there's so many things about Paul's mission that go right along with mine. So without any further ado, I would like to bring onto the show my new friend, Paul Zelizer.
Thank you so much for having me, Diane. It's an honor to be here.
I'm so happy that you're here, and I have so many questions for you. So we're just going to start and go with it.
Sounds great.
My first question, or my first thing I'd like you to share, I guess, is a little bit about your work. You work with conscious people and entrepreneurs and people who are trying to make a big impact on the world. And I would like you just to give us an overview of your current work. And then, of course, I'm going to dive into how you got here. But tell us a little bit about who you are now.
That's a great question, Diane. So the easy way, the fast way to explain this or to help people understand is if anybody knows what a Venn diagram is, right? So think of three circles. One of the circles in the center will say conscious business. Another circle would say social impact. And another circle in the center would say awareness practices. And a Venn diagram is where circles like that intersect. And in that intersection of conscious business, social impact, and awareness practices, there's an aliveness and a power. Before I did this, I used to work in the nonprofit world and the community mental health world. And I felt like I was putting band-aids on things. And I wanted to go where the power is, where the engine is. And business is what's driving the majority of decisions. Money and business is what's driving the majority of decisions on planet Earth. And when I was feeling kind of beat up and burnt out in the community mental health work, while it was very good work, it was sacred work with restorative justice and healing circles and all that beautiful stuff, I felt out of the sort of tables, and I wanted to sync up with the engine and where the horsepower was on planet Earth. So that's, 13 years ago, I made that decision, and it's just gotten more refined and, made a lot of mistakes along the way. But that's what I do these days.
Oh, that's amazing. And I love the intersection of where those, I'm drawing the Venn diagram in my head as you're speaking. And the intersection is that place for me where my passion lies, and what the world wants. It's like all is where that enthusiasm is. And so sometimes people have a hard time getting to that spot, or maybe they can sense it, but they're not really sure how to step into it. So would you be willing to share a little bit about your story? Like, when did you start thinking about these kinds of things? How old were you? How did you get here? Because, it's like you're very successful and you just eloquently stated how it is, but I don't think it started just that way. There has to be a journey. And I really think that if people could understand the journey, that we would all have even a deeper appreciation for that power center.
Yeah. For anybody who's listening, feeling like, oh gosh, everybody else in the world is on a linear path and mine's nonlinear. Like, here's to all the nonlinear folks. Like, I just see you and celebrate you. So the short version of my story that might help people understand how I got here is in high school, I was really struggling with substance abuse. And I won't bore you with all the details, but just think of a, really smart, very sensitive young man who felt confused about this world that we're living in and trying to navigate it, and turn to substances to try to, you know, stay on the planet, right? To numb and not check out. So, but it started to really not work for me. And a very wise woman, when I was 17 years old, after a particularly significant bender with drugs and alcohol, said to me, "Paul, here's the deal. You are wired for poignant experiences. And that goes one of two ways. You can either have a lifetime of addiction and drama and probably die early, or there are these things called like awareness practices. There's a lot of them out there. I don't really care which one you choose, but I hope you find one and cultivate a rich inner life. And if you do, you'll have a life of service and joy and meaning and purpose. It won't always be easy, but you'll really enjoy your life. I hope you choose that path."
Wow. At 17, huh?
17. And I heard her because she wasn't trying, like it wasn't about recruiting me to a brand of spirituality. I mean, this is called somebody, gets me, right?
Right.
She got me. She wasn't trying to recruit me for a particular path of spirituality or church. She just like saw, she had vocabulary and I think she was wired similarly. And she helped me understand my own nervous system is the way I talk about it. And I heard her and I said, "I think she's right." And I started meditating and going to, you know, it started me on a seeker journey. And, you know, I'm not 17 anymore. I've been on a journey for a while and, you know, I've done all kinds of work and have lived in, you know, I've lived not an easy, but a blessed life. I live here in New Mexico and I moved to New Mexico in 1993. And I like to say this place is my biggest teacher. It's not like the most of the United States. Let's just say that. It's a very, people have been living intentionally here for at least 1,000 years. And that makes a difference. I've been incredibly blessed to have the kinds of authentic and humble mentors that I wish more people on planet Earth would have the opportunity to be connected with and learn from in a very personal way. So to understand some of my journey, you just have to understand this place I live. I've been here since 1993. I've lived in New Mexico longer than anywhere else on planet Earth. So it was a wise move for this particular nervous system and how I'm wired and what the values are here. That's a little, yeah, went into community mental health, had 15-year career. I was sort of the innovative guy. Like I was a white guy with a degree in New Mexico who was willing to try things like family group decision-making and restorative justice. And I did batterers intervention and engaging young men as fathers and incredible work and got to go into communities where people who look like me oftentimes don't go or at least aren't always welcome. And because I had a degree in the communities needed help interfacing with things like the court system and the education system and child protective services, I got to be in the midst of some incredibly poignant and very powerful dialogues about trauma and healing and racism and sexism and intersectionality that, again, most people like that look like me don't get to go to. Certainly most white men that look like me. And it was a fabulous learning. And after 15 years of that, I burned out. I was tired. And like I said, I felt like I was sort of disconnected from the horsepower of what's really creating these ripples that the communities that I was working in were trying to, in some ways, kind of piece things back together. And I wanted to go right where the engine that was driving, where the ripples started, that we were trying to clean up so much, and decided to go into the realm of business and try to bring consciousness and learn about how to do that. It's now 13 years ago. So that's the short version, or not so short version.
That's so interesting, bringing the consciousness into business. And I remember years ago, and I'm trying to remember, it was probably around a decade ago, reading this book called Good Business. And it was these two authors who I cannot remember their names for anything. I just see the title of the book, and it was largely bringing metaphysical spiritual practices into
work into the business world. And I thought, oh, this is so relieving that there are people starting to actually talk about the higher spiritual way within a corporate kind of setting. And so now I'm listening to you and reflecting on some of your interviews and just what some of the work I know that you've already done, and go, wow, what an amazing trajectory. A sensitive, gifted man who's white trying to navigate all of these things. And I'm really grateful that you picked the point in experience, happy spiritual road, and you didn't pick the drug and alcohol early death road, because you're really doing some great things.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
The other thing I'd say, Diane, if somebody wants to understand who I am and how I got here, it'd be hard to understand without knowing the fact that I was raised Jewish, and in particular, a progressive activist Judaism thread. Very spiritual, but also very aware of social context issues. And just to give like a little snapshot, when my grandmother was 80 years old, she lived in New York. I was born in New York. New York City. I was born in Queens, but she lived in Brooklyn. And when she was 80 years old, she was organizing busloads of women to go from New York to Washington, D.C. for a march for women's rights. And she filled those buses, right? That's what we do. It's in my DNA, literally, the teachings. Right now, there's a hashtag that's a movement on planet Earth, and certainly here in the U.S., which is Never Again Is Now. And the idea of never again is a Jewish frame that after the Holocaust, our elders taught us in the more progressive ends of Judaism, that it's our job as the people who survived the Holocaust, the Jews who survived the Holocaust in our tradition, to, you know, do our best to fight fascism and hatred, and not just never again for Jews, but never again for anyone. That was our sort of cultural legacy, having had the experience of so many of our ancestors killed and murdered and harmed in the Holocaust. So yes, I am a white man, and that's how the world sees me. But I'm also a Jewish man, and stand on the shoulders of people who, you know, 5,000 year old tradition that suffered a lot in those 5,000 years, and has said to our young people that it's our job to work for something called tikkun olam in Hebrew, which means the great healing. It's our job. It's why we're on the planet. Yes, you want to love your people. You want to love your kids. You want to enjoy the heck out of life as much as you know how. And there's a sacred obligation to be thinking about tikkun olam.
Wow. Yes. I have some good friends of mine. In fact, most of my friends that I consider really close to my heart are Jewish. And it's interesting, because when I was first becoming aware of my spirituality years ago, because I was not really exposed to it growing up, and I was in college, I guess, and I remember going to some services and going, I really resonate with them. Like, that was my first real connection with the sacred power of the ancestors and the lineage and the traditions and all of that. And it's, I hear it even in your voice, and I'm reflecting on all my friends too. And my feeling, there's something to it that's much greater than words could ever say. It's like a calling that's beyond words. It's just magical to me. It's amazing.
I love that you brought that up, Diane. And without going, like, kind of like the way the woman who was such a wise woman in my journey, without getting into branding, I don't really care what your listeners might, what the brand is. If somebody wants some suggestions, I'm happy to share them and what I did. But when I was feeling under-resourced and burned out and trying to make sense of a very complicated time, not only did I leave my, you know, chosen and known career as a mental health person in community mental health, I also went through a divorce and a whole bunch of other things at the same time, about 13 years ago. And I was feeling really shaky and uncertain about what the next steps were. And some of the work I did was around intergenerational healing. And without, again, going into the details of what that looks like for anybody, there are an incredible amount of wisdom in many wisdom traditions about making peace with our ancestors, understanding the lineage we come from, and letting our ancestors have our back, like literally in the tradition that I learned some of this from. Our ancestors are there to help when we have a purpose and a mission on this planet. You know, when you experience Paul Zelizer on this podcast or as I'm out in the world doing what I do, I know in every cell in my body that there is a whole lot of humans that came before me that have my back, that want me to succeed in this purpose. This 5,000 year legacy, that's a lot of humans. And they were smart and intelligent and dedicated and caring and passionate people. So I'm just like Rumi, the poet, talks about, we're like a wave on the ocean of consciousness. Like this being called Paul Zelizer, who's in this body with this consciousness, has a 5,000-year-old tradition that I'm at peace with. That wasn't always the case, but in this moment, I'm at peace with, and I bring with me, and I try to remember every step of the way is informing. And when I'm on purpose, in alignment, is supporting what I'm doing in any given moment.
Oh, that's perfect. I love it. It's everything you said is so true. It's like, I'm speechless. Like, of course, right? So what I'd like to know a little bit about is the awareness practices. If somebody was listening to us, and okay, we've been doing our awareness practices for years and years and have had lots of learning experiences between the two of us that we can, that are probably similar and divergent. What would you say to somebody who is like, oh, wow, I want to have that kind of intensity, or what you're saying is speaking to them, but they don't know where to start? Like, where would they start? Like that lady invited you, that wise woman, and just kind of left the door open. But if you were going to do an invitation to the listener who's flirting with your great words, how would you invite them to maybe start some awareness practices if they don't know what to do?
That's a great question, Diane. I think of two things. One is start some small, doable, you know, what's his name? Dan Harris in 10% Happier. You know, like he talks a lot. He's a big meditation fan. So things really started to shift for me when I got regular. And things got regular for me and my practices, and I'm a bunch of them. I won't bore you with all the details, but when I made them doable, so like this morning I meditated for 7 minutes. I'm a busy guy and I have a whole range of practices, but I used to try to meditate for an hour, or at one point an hour and a half a day. And I just got overwhelmed when I got busy. I couldn't keep it up, right? Like I'm a parent, you know, my daughter now is grown, but I had a young kid at the time, and you know, I have two businesses now, not just one. And I'm trying to do community work and I have a friendship, you know, just like family and friends and taking care of your health. Like I watch myself and other people sort of like burden ourselves down with these like incredible expectations. I'm supposed to be creative. I have a guitar sitting in my office here, right? Like how the hell is a human supposed to do all? You can't, right? If I'm supposed to play the guitar an hour a day and meditate an hour and a half a day, and you know, you got to exercise at least an hour a day, and you're supposed to eat right and don't go out to restaurants, so you got to cook it all. Like, and then I'm supposed to work when, and you know, so to like scale your practices with a lot of compassion, do them, have a regular practice. And again, I don't care what it is. If it's yoga, if it's meditation, you want to do contemplative Christian practices, Jewish davening, you want to greet the sun like they do here. And some of the communities, the indigenous communities have a practice, go out and greet the sun every morning, right? It can be a few minutes, but finding some practice that you're going to do regularly. And like, it's a long haul, like sign up for the rest of your life. If you need to change your practice or adapt it, or, you know, meditate 3 times a week on a cushion and do yoga, I don't care, but have a regular practice that's scaled to the realities of what life looks like, and do it with kindness, and do it like almost every day, even if it's for a minute. And then the second one is, there's a story from Buddhism that's touched my heart many years ago. And there was one of the disciples asked Buddha, what were the most important things if somebody wanted to practice Buddhism well, be a skillful human being? It's kind of the same question you asked, Diane. Mm-hmm. And the Buddha said he called it the three crown jewels of Buddhism. There's three things in a spiritual practice that are incredibly sacred. One is the Buddha, that is the teacher. Not literally, in my mind, are we talking about some being, the one human being, but that having a teacher is an incredible gift. Number two is a set of teachings. It's called the Dharma in Buddhism, right? The set of experiences and practices and written tradition from the lineage, et cetera, et cetera. And the third is the Sangha. The Sangha is the community of practice. And the Buddha said to the person that asked the question, they're the crown jewels, right? They're all sacred. But if you only get to have one, right, the most sacred is the Sangha, is the community of practice. So what I would say to somebody who's listening is, you know, start your individual practice, you know, sit on the cushion at home or do your yoga or do your greet the sun or do your morning sacred mindfulness walk, whatever you're going to do, have a practice. And then number two is the kind of change that we're longing for. My guess is your listeners are a lot like you and I, Dan. The kind of big changes that, you know, where it feels like we're off track on planet Earth, the only way that's going to shift is in community. There's no one of us, or at least I would say, I have no illusion that I, by myself, am going to, you know, this is a big ocean liner. It's going to take a whole community to turn the trajectory we're on. And part of the reason I feel alive and excited to be alive, even though these are incredibly painful, poignant, and at times really scary times, is that I feel deeply embedded in communities that I feel engaged with and aligned with and passionate about. And I just love, and I mean that word love in every sense of the word, every cell in my body, the humans that I get up and go to work with, and I worship with, and I eat with, and I trail run with, and I in conflict with at times. I have fabulous humans in my life, and we're values aligned, working to a pretty similar vision of what a better Earth would be. I don't feel alone and isolated in that. So some sense of Sangha, some sense of a community of practice is, I don't know how to survive these times without it.
Oh, that a Sangha and having a sense of connection is I think it's the most important thing as well. And sometimes people feel really alone and isolated. In fact, I wrote a book called The Loneliness Cure, and it talks about that if we're going to cure loneliness, it's a spiritual practice to be with like-minded connection versus looking outside of ourselves for something that's going to medicate, you know? It's so vital and so important. And so many listeners to this podcast experience sometimes a sense of loneliness, even when they are like in a community. One gentleman wrote to me and he was saying how his friends and his community, we would call it a sangha, but you know, the people in his world only could see his, as he put it, geeky intelligence, you know, like he was a computer geeky kind of guy and a really genius in that way. And they missed and were missing, which is why he sent me the email, that he's sensitive and he sees things and he has a service-oriented mission, that his heart is something very different than just the superficial geeky guy that everyone else saw. And he was having a hard time feeling heard and understood by the other men around him. And you know, so he's asking me this question. And of course, I race sailboats with a lot of men, so I can kind of relate a little bit. But what would you say to somebody like that who's like looking to be heard and understood, and just the men in his world currently don't get him? Is there a suggestion or something that maybe you could offer him that would help him, you know, get a little bit more movement for him?
That's a great question, Diane. Boy, there's so much I could say. For 7.5 years, I was the executive director of a men's center here in New Mexico. And before that, I trained with a wonderful organization in Massachusetts. My mentor has now gone on, it's now called the Men's Resources International, Stephen Botkin. So I've literally sat with men for a lot of years, decades. My first men's circle was in 1980. And it pretty much never stopped. So anyway, if there's men on this who are listening to this, I feel you, brother. I hear you. There are, depending where you live, here in New Mexico, we're blessed to have, it'll actually celebrate a 35-year anniversary. We're one of the most rural states in the country. Sometimes there are networks that existing men have worked hard. There's a fabulous man here in New Mexico named Victor Lacherva. Victor has a podcast. I don't know if you can do show notes, Diane. Maybe we can put the link in the show notes. Yeah. And started an organization that's now called New Mexico Men's Wellness. It'll be 30. We're celebrating a 35-year anniversary in the fall. There's a dinner. So in some places there are kind of existing places for men who are wanting to be in more honest and open dialogue with other men. And other places right now, one of the men's communities that's most I'm in a men's group. We've been going about 5.5 years. I also have a mastermind buddy for my business who has a similar business to me, but he more focuses on wellness entrepreneurs. I focus on social entrepreneurs and conscious entrepreneurs, but we've been meeting for close to 6 years now, Jason Stein. But it's way more than business. We just spent 3.5 days at a beach house in San Diego. And in the 3.5 days, we talked business maybe 2 hours, and we swam and we played with his kids and we went for walks and we ate amazing food and we drank beer and we told stories and we laughed and we took naps, right? So the communities that I am feeling the most connected with men aren't the formal ones, although I'm glad they're there. The ones that, like Jason, or my little men's group of six, or I have a trail running group with some guys that I've just come to love deeply, deeply. A lot of that has been either me organizing it, like the little men's group of six that we've been meeting for 5.5 years, was me and a buddy saying, I think it's time for a men's group. What do you think? And we put it together and we made the rules because it's our men's group.
Perfect, right?
Or, you know, with Jason and I, one of us or both of us decided to take some risks and be vulnerable. Or in my little trail running group, I just moved to Albuquerque after being in Santa Fe for 13 years. It was time to be where there was more entrepreneurs and just the resources of a bigger city. So I moved here just this past winter when my daughter went to college. I decided it was time for a new phase of my life and to be in a city for the first time in a really long time. And this little trail running group, it's only been 6 months that I've been here, but you know, and our stated purpose is to trail run. But I took some risks and these guys leaned in and they met me. And I also took some risks in some other circles with men, a hiking group. And it didn't go well in the hiking group. I don't go to the hiking group anymore. But the trail running buddies, like an awesome kind of leaning in that has happened. And our stated purpose, like I said, is trail running. But the guys there were ready. I adore these guys. And we're planning hiking trips and backpacking, and you know, we've gone and had beers and just shared like the real of our lives. But I had to be willing to, you know, not overshare, but like consciously be willing to lean in a little bit and see if there was anything there. And some places in my life, the answer I got was no. And those places became de-emphasized in my life. And in some places, there are men who are like, oh, thank God, somebody's willing to go there. And those places get prioritized in my life.
Right. So those men that did the thank God part were on some level yearning and searching, and all you had to do was take the risk to open the door, and you immediately got the feedback that, wow, and so did they, that there was something that there. And just like the other group, that door wasn't open. And when you leaned into it, it didn't feel right. So I think that's a really valuable lesson for everybody, men and women. It's like, if you're looking for a group or you want to be connected, be willing to be the first person to step into it and be okay with whatever the outcome is. Not everybody's going to resonate with this, but if somebody doesn't take a first step, nobody takes a step, you know?
There's a saying in the entrepreneur world, Diane, and it says, be willing to ask for forgiveness instead of permission.
Yes.
Be willing to ask for forgiveness instead of permission. So like the way I'm at, I'm 51 years old. You know, like I'm not getting any younger. Like, life is short and it's precious. I've got good people in my life and I'm busy, right? I've got time for, I will make time for any human being who's willing to be real and honest about what's going on in their life and what's happening on planet Earth. Tell me your vision. How do we get out of this mess and pass on a world to our children and the next generations that's livable and will help them thrive and experience some of the blessings that our ancestors and that I've been able to experience? If you want to have that conversation, great. If you don't, you want to play like who's got the nicest toys, or I make more money than you, or I'm whatever, smarter than you, or I'm busy. Life's too short. So yeah, being an entrepreneur has changed me in some pretty profound ways. And one of them is I don't ask for permission anymore. I try not to be obnoxious, but I'm willing to take risks in every area of my life, including that. I don't wait. I'm not sitting around waiting for where are the guys, you know, where's some exactly perfectly created circle of men that fits what I'm looking for. I lean into existing places in my life or go find them. I just moved to Albuquerque and I was looking for people doing active things. Oh, here's a trail running group. Oh, look at that. It's almost all guys. Oh, okay, cool. What happens when somebody says, hey man, what's up on our regular Friday night run after work? And I actually say, yeah, here's what's up. Some hard stuff happened today. Or, oh my gosh, something awesome happened today. And I was real. And how does that go? And I didn't ask his permission. I just did it. He asked me how I'm doing. I'm going to take him at face value and I'm going to ask him how he's doing. And if he really can't meet me there, I'm in the wrong circle and I'm going to go find somewhere else, or I'll create it.
Oh, that's amazing. I am laughing so hard because I go through the same thing. Somebody asked me how I was doing and I told them how I was really doing because that's what they asked. And a friend of mine was with me and they go, oh no, they were just being nice. They didn't want to hear the answer.
That American, like, this is how you're supposed to greet you. How you doing? And I don't even like stay still long enough because I passed you on the street. It's like, all right, well, yeah. But if somebody stops and they're actually like asking me the question, you're going to get a real answer. And you know, like, if you can't deal with that, then just know that about me and you should probably go ask that question to somebody who's going to answer in the way you expect.
Oh, exactly. It's so hilarious. I went through this phase where when people would just say that and I knew that they didn't want to know how I was really doing, and they never would break their stride. They kept walking. Like there was not even a pause, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So I would go, do you really want to know? And they'd go, uh-huh, and kept on walking. I'm like, see?
Kept on walking. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, there we go. Then we have evidence. Oh my gosh, you just brought that whole flashback back.
But what happens, you know, to the guys that are listening, what happens when you're a guy who changes the way you ask that question? There's permission in the culture. Hey man, how you doing? Do you stop? Do you make eye contact? What's the tone and communication in your voice and non-verbally? You can cue somebody non-verbally, like, you have my full attention. Mm-hmm. For anybody who really wants to build this muscle, one of the interviews that I got to meet with this person, her name is Tracy Rubel, and she is the founder of this fabulous, like, social change through empathetic listening project called Sidewalk Talk. And the dialogue with Tracy, I might get to have some really cool dialogue, Diane. Really cool. I mean, I'm blessed to talk to some really smart people. But Tracy is both a psychotherapist who's really informed by neuroscience and also a social activist who's deeply concerned about what's happening here on planet Earth and the polarization that we're seeing here, especially in the United States. And Tracy and her team at Sidewalk Talk are deeply informed about the neuroscience of listening and what happens when we invite ourselves and train ourselves to listen in a particularly informed and aware kind of way. I won't say any more because they're the geniuses, but if you're that person like, well, I want to create a space where other men will lean in and cue that I really am listening, but I don't know how, go check out what they're doing. They are literally world class. I've never seen anything like it, what they're doing.
And it's funny because I listened to that episode of your Awarepreneurs podcast where you interviewed her recently. And I think I've told 5 or 6 of my friends about it and sent it to them. I said, you have to hear this interview and what Paul asked him and what this woman says. It was eye-opening. I've listened to it twice already. So it's funny because I could never remember her name. I could remember everything other than her last name. And I just wrote it down again, of course, and I will put a link to your show, that interview, in these show notes for anybody who wants to listen to it, because it was amazing. They are really doing some great things. You are correct on that. It was great.
So yeah, if we are waiting around for somebody to meet us in some sort of depth listening kind of way, may just be that the other person is longing for it, but they don't know how. So if I can build that muscle and practice that and learn about it from smart people like Tracy and just others who are really skilled, you know, Brene Brown talks about leading with vulnerability. There's so much out there. A lot of it, women are definitely way ahead of men in this, I would say, but I don't really care what somebody's gender is or what culture they come from. I'm just here to learn. And so if somebody like Tracy has something to teach me, I'm going to go learn it and then practice it with men. And guess what? There's a whole bunch of guys who are so deeply longing for meaningful connection that if I just make the tiniest amount of listening space for them and invite them in, I got more guys in my life than I know what to do with. And that's great. What a wonderful problem to have. Like, how do I meet them? How do I make time for them all? Right? When I hear most guys just starving for connection.
Right. It's so true. And it's like that little bit of water you give them, that's that little bit. And it's like, wow. And it's such a relief to know that and to have somebody who can actually hear you and listen and be part of the dialogue. And it's a great invitation for people to keep growing. Like, I have a practice of learning, spending almost an hour every day learning something I know nothing about, whether it's through listening to podcasts or reading or any of the different ways to get the information or to have a different understanding. And it really has paid off for me because I can talk to just about anybody about just about anything a little bit, or at least hear them in a really deep way because of that decision to exercise that muscle to be a good listener on a deeper level and to share what's really true from my heart and, you know, without all the extra superficial things. And I think it makes a difference. It makes a difference, I know, in my life and my people around me life. But I think that when we're making these kinds of commitment, Paul, wouldn't you say that people who are doing these kinds of commitments really are like changing the trajectory of what's happening on earth and making things more hopeful?
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were talking, Diane, yeah, like for your listeners, I didn't know this about you, Diane, but before we turned on the recording, you said you have 3 podcasts now, right? Or you're starting your third or something like that.
Right.
And I was thinking about how much, if we let the practice of podcast, at least interview podcasts, not like, let me get behind the mic and tell you all the shit I know, right? That's good too. I've learned a lot from really smart people, but what you're talking about, if you're really in the role of being curious, and you don't have to have a podcast, but I'm just like saying, you do this, Diane, I can tell you. I mean, you're addicted to podcasting and being a host, not because you want to go tell everybody that how awesome you are and how much you know, or like try to make a gazillion dollars by, you know, being the expert on stage. Not that I hope you make a gazillion dollars, Diane. But there's something about sitting in that role of being the curious, inquisitive, I love to learn and I'm fascinated by humans who care enough to dedicate their life to learn deeply about a topic area and then ask them about it and amplify it and try to bring really wise, thoughtful, caring, compassionate people who are looking about where we are right now as a human family on this planet and have something to say about that. Is there any more sacred practice than that? No one? I don't think so. Yeah, yeah. And you're doing it in 3 different domains right now. So listeners, part of the reason, you know, maybe some vocabulary, why you love Diane's work so much is because in that role of curious listener and bringing forth certain ideas and amplifying it rather than being the person who's saying what the culture tends to value in a more masculine power over kind of way, or the people who grab the mic and do it with a lot of bravado and ego. it's a really humble and yet incredibly powerful way of being in the world to do what you're addicted to doing, Diane, and I honor you for it.
Thank you so much. I am addicted to it more than I realize, and I'm just thinking about my podcasts, and the other one that's live now, that the second one, is a guided meditation podcast for visionary leaders, because I wrote a meditation book with daily meditations for visionary leaders with like an application so they can have a focus for their morning routine. And so I now have a guided meditation podcast that goes with it. And then my third one that's just getting ready to launch like in the next few days is called Sailing Legends. And it's because I really believe the legacy of a lot of the yacht racers and sailors just around the world, there is nobody out there preserving the stories. And one morning I was at the yacht club with my brother, and he just started telling a story. He goes, "See that finish line over there?" I go, "Yep." We've raced there since we were children. And he goes, "Well, I was 9 the first time I crossed that with this person and that person." He reminisced on the entire story. And I sat there and I looked in the club, and there were many of my friends and now their children and grandchildren. And I'm like, no one's preserving the stories. And we have to preserve the stories. That's what it is. And so the third podcast is being launched, and I took the big risk this morning. I had the art designed, and I've prayed about it, and I've thought about it, and I'm like, do I really want to take it on? You know, is it really, you know, like, how does this fit into my bigger picture? You know, all of those things. And then this morning where I put it on social media, any sailors want to be interviewed, and it's like my phone's blowing up. And part of me wasn't really sure it was going to matter to them like it does me, and I'm finding it does. And so I'm really glad I took that risk, and I'm going to do it. I'm committed to it, and that there is something in it that people are already seeing, even though it's not even really live yet completely. It's just kind of being born now, and it means a lot to me to be able to be in that place to see the vision and see where that place of connection is, and then offer it to people in a way that they didn't even know was possible. Like, I don't think anyone even thought of doing a podcast and having people tell their stories about sailing specifically. You know, racing sailboats is the second most dangerous sport in the world. There's a lot to it. And so I love the listening. You're right. I think I am addicted to it, Paul. Thanks for that.
Hi, my name's Diane, and I'm addicted to empathetic listening.
Right, exactly.
I can imagine a lot worse things to be addicted to, Diane.
Okay, well, very good. So there, now we have that established. But it's true. I'm listening to you, and I'm like, whoa, yeah, that really is what my heart is saying. That's the truth of it. No matter what the outside part looks like. So I'd like to talk a little bit about, well, I want to talk a little bit about Awarepreneurs. Then I also want to talk about your work with the leaders that you work with, because it's like you have two different things going on, and they're both like amazing. I know that the Awarepreneurs podcast has helped change my life from the interviews you've had, and also from just the kind of thoughtful content, the intersection that you speak of, and the way you find people that are in that power spot of that Venn diagram we started the show with is absolutely stellar. So tell us a little bit about how it feels for you to be the host of this kind of just transformative, amazing podcast. Like, how does it feel to be Paul Zelizer on the Awarepreneurs podcast?
Thank you for your kind words, Diane. These are really poignant times. And if you're paying attention in almost any domain of whether it's what's happening environmentally on the planet, whether it's happening in the realm of inequalities and hate crimes going up daily, just this is not... I'm a science-based guy, so if you're somebody who can't handle this, go somewhere else. I'm not going to fight with you about it. Just, you know, really smart people are saying our planet is in big trouble. Really smart people are tracking that hate crimes are going up in the U.S. and now across the world. Really smart people are tracking what are happening to women, and, you know, reading things like here in New Mexico that Native women are being abused and murdered at a 10x rate. We've got major things going on this planet, and I'm not wired to ignore it. I don't think we can ignore it without harm to ourselves. And I don't think we can create the kind of communities that we want to pass on to our children without being willing to witness what's happening literally on the ground, in the ground, of the ground that we walk on every day. That's what some of the elders here in New Mexico have taught me. We must pay attention if we want other generations to have ground to walk on that's not completely burnt to a crisp. We must walk on this ground as if it's sacred. And we're not doing a very good job of that as a human family right now. To be able to have conversations with people where that's not in question, we're not fighting about, is climate change for real? Are women being harmed by certain policies and unconscious biases? Is there inequality that's affecting people of color's lives in profound ways? I'm not interested in fighting, but I am interested in acknowledging, and I'm deeply interested in the conversations about what does it look like to change, to turn the ocean liner in some of these very profound and complex ways. I would go insane. And I don't mean that like jokingly. I mean, literally, I would go insane, or I would harm myself, or I would be off in the realm of addictions. I'm not somebody who can pretend that these things aren't happening. I'm not wired that way. It's not my tradition. I have a 5,000-year-old tradition that's telling me I'm asked and charged with going into the hard conversations of our times, just like the Jewish leaders who went into hard conversations of their times. And I would be disrespecting and disavowing the tradition I come from to not go there. And I would have to harm myself or somehow numb myself or literally just take myself off the planet if I wasn't doing that in some way. So when I get to wake up in the morning and work with an individual leader who has a social impact, conscious business, when I get to turn on the podcast mic and have these kinds of conversations, Diane, when I open up Facebook, and pretty much one of the few things I do on Facebook these days is go to the Awarepreneurs community of 315 now, entrepreneurs who are willing to go to those hard places and support each other. I'm grateful. I feel alive. I feel on purpose. I feel like, well, it's a mess out there, but at least I'm doing my best. I can look my daughter in the eye, and any other young person born or as yet unborn, and say, in these incredibly poignant times, this is what I was doing. This is how I'm living my life. These are the conversations. This is how I earned my money. This is how I spent my time. And I can feel an integrity and an alignment that I'm literally doing the best I know how to do. And I can also take down time and rest and live a good life in a time that feels very chaotic and there's a lot to be scared about. And I am scared of, will we turn the ship? I don't know. But what I do know is there are a whole lot of people who are doing their best, and I get to spend my time learning from them and amplifying what they're working so hard in. And they know more than I do about what's going on for women of color and how to change that, or what's going on environmentally in a particular part of what's happening in the environmental movement. And I learn, I amplify, I connect, and then I can sleep well and eat well and live a good life in a very chaotic and concerning time. That's what it's like to be me.
That's that antidote, you know, to the chaos, is that inner connection and that inner calm, and knowing that we're doing the very best we can to amplify it. That's beautifully said. I'm even more inspired now. I love it. So you work with entrepreneurs, right, who want to have impact in the world as a business coach. So it's not just the podcast. You are out there actually helping people kind of live their dream and up-level their impact and influence. And so tell us a little bit about how you work with people. Like if somebody's listening to you right now and they're moved, which I would think everyone would be, I know I am. And somebody says, oh, I want to step into that part of me that's stuck or that part of me that I don't know what to do with. This guy might be able to help me with some of the how questions or what do I do next? How would somebody work with you? What's it look like?
Thanks for that question, Diane. They're very related, but I basically have two businesses. So I work one-on-one and in small groups with entrepreneurs who have in this intersection, right? Conscious business, awareness practices, and social impact. And that's through paulzelizer.com. So one-on-one coaching and consulting, whether it's a one-time strategy session for somebody who has a business and it's up and running. And I did one recently, somebody just making some changes to their business model. So it could be like, let's just drop in for an hour and a half or a whole day or a full retreat. I do like 3-day, 5-day retreats here in New Mexico. But you know, sometimes it's just like, I just need to talk to somebody. I don't want to like do a year's worth of coaching. I'm just trying to decide what to do about the most recent one was somebody who had a 6-city tour of events. Of workshops and just how to market it and who to connect with and how to amplify it and some decisions she was making about pricing, right? So it could be as simple as a one-time strategy session. I also do the more traditional 6-month business coaching for people in that space. And I also have wonderful, I have 3 of them right now, small groups of conscious entrepreneurs with this desire to make a significant impact that we meet every week for an hour and a half and we go deep. And a lot of that is people in earlier development of, okay, I got an idea, but I need help building this thing out. Maybe I don't know what to say on a website or who to build it or what do I call this or how much do I charge for this? And how do I structure this? How do I get the word out about this into the world? So that's paulzelizer.com, one-on-one and small groups. And then Awarepreneurs is more a membership community model. Like I said, we have 315 people in the community right now, and it's growing. Awarepreneurs, the podcast is really gaining traction. You were talking about your podcast kind of hit some sort of new level or came to another, things really shifted for you in terms of your visibility at about episode 100, I think you said, Diane. I think we're about episode 85 or something like that. And it's really getting traction. And so the word's spreading and the community's growing. And that's a very simple, affordable membership model. It starts at $5 a month for people who are new in business or social impact entrepreneurs who aren't making much money, or you're from a country or a region where it's not like a developed country economy, and like $5 a month would be a lot for somebody like that, it's fair for somebody like that. And then there's other levels. And that's the membership part of Awarepreneurs. And we do community calls, and we have a Facebook group where people can, get input from other people who are doing this kind of work. So, and that's all at awarepreneurs.com. You can find out about the community.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you have all these amazing choices for people to check out. And of course, I will make sure that your both websites for paulzelizer.com and awarepreneurs.com are in the show notes, along with all of the ways to follow you on social media and contact. I love the things that you post. And so even if you don't reach out to Paul and you're not really sure if you want to listen to, work with him or whatever, check out the community, but definitely follow him on social media, because Paul offers some just amazing things. And sometimes I'll open it up and I'll see something you've written, Paul, or something you've shared. And I'm like, oh, like somebody gets me. Like my podcast is Someone Gets Me, and I feel gotten when I just hear those kinds of things from you. So I invite all of you to make sure you follow Paul, and all of this will be in the show notes for you, along with the links that we've mentioned. And I'm also going to add a link to Jason Stein, who you mentioned earlier. He was interviewed on this show quite some time ago, and I have great respect for his work as well. So I think that when we all kind of put together all of the synergies of all of the people out here that are invited into this space, it becomes an amazing amplification, and it's an amazing opportunity to really create some effective change that's exponential in nature. So I really thank you, Paul, for being on the show. And I have one final question for you.
It's got to be a hard one. You told me you're going to ask me really hard questions.
People always say, Diane, you ask questions I've never been asked before. And I'm like, I'm just asking the curious, cool questions of the cool people.
I love
right?
your questions. I'm just teasing you.
I just think it's fun. I think we're going to have to do a second episode because I have more questions and I'm trying to be conscious of your time. And so here's my last question for this episode. How's that? That is, if we were going to put a billboard up that the whole world would see that has a message on it from you, what would be on that billboard?
Oh, goodness. Soundbites. Soundbites are so hard. I don't know, Diane. I guess it would be something like, the only way I know how to change the world is through deep dialogue.
That's beautiful. And then we could have your website right under it.
Sure.
For more information.
Or send them to Tracy Ruble or send them to Diane. Right. I don't care. It would be like, kind of like that wise woman said to me, I don't really care where you go to learn about deep dialogue, but go somewhere.
Exactly. So that could be the billboard. It doesn't matter where you go for deep dialogue, but go do it.
Well, first you got to say, like, if you want to change the world and you're deeply concerned about the trajectory, you got to learn about deep dialogue. And then where you go to learn about it, you know, go to this website and there'll be 27,000 places you could go to learn about it. That's what I would say.
That's perfect. So we could have like a series of billboards,
you know, exactly.
You know, like I noticed when I'm driving through South Carolina and there's that one place, the sombrero guy, I'm losing the name of it right now, but south of the border, where they have 10 more miles, so south of the border.
Oh, I remember that when I was a kid. Oh my God, I haven't thought of that forever.
Well, it just popped in my mind. So your billboard would be a series of billboards, and so that way the message could cover. See, so we got it.
There we go. Got it.
And it would be way more deep than south of the border. But anyway, so I want to thank you very much for being on the show and for taking time out of your busy and complete wonderful day to share amazing wisdom and be willing to be the recipient of all kinds of interesting questions from me. And is there anything else that you would like to say that maybe I didn't cover, didn't ask about, or that's on your heart so that when we're done, you feel complete?
My guess is that some of the people or some significant percentage of the people who are listening, who are feeling like you're struggling to be understood, I think that is because you're noticing that we're off purpose as a human family. And to really honor the fact that you either intuitively or consciously or both, some part of you is saying we're off track. We're like profoundly off track. And I want to say you're not crazy. And there's a lot of other people who are thinking like you. And listen to that voice. It'll take you to the place where your life, even in these crazy, chaotic, concerning times, it'll help you find right relationship. It is possible to be in right relationship and live a purposeful, meaningful, beautiful, service-driven life. Even if you don't know too many people doing that.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Diane. I really appreciate it.
Oh, this has been great. Everybody, you've been listening to Paul Zelizer from paulzelizer.com, an amazing conscious business coach and great human being. So remember to follow him on Facebook and all the other social media places and let him know you heard him here, because he's got a mighty message and it's great to know where it is. And in the meantime, remember to keep your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. You're a rock star and you're here on purpose with a purpose. So go out there and let your light shine. And until the next episode, Someone Gets Me, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit SomeoneGetsMe.com. Again, thanks for listening.